Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to an episode of the Truffle Tales podcast, where it's my job to tease out stories of inspiration, wisdom, and helpful bits of advice from truffle hunters and mushroom experts and enthusiasts from around the world, helping you to connect more deeply with Mother Nature and the wonderful world of truffles and mushrooms. And on today's episode, I'm very happy to announce that we've got James Fever with us today. Since 2012, James has been the owner of the English Truffle Company, where he not only sells truffles to Michelin star chefs, private individuals, and truffle dealers, but he also sells truffle inoculated trees, unique truffle hunting experience days, and much more besides. James and his truffles have been featured on Radio 4, BBC News, ITV, and a host of newspapers and magazines, including The Guardian, Financial Times, Countryfile, and the Great British Food Magazine, just to name a few. He's also been featured on an insider video series titled 21 Jobs You Probably Never Knew Existed, as well as a Business Insider video all about truffles, which went viral and now has over more than 14 million views. Also, James and his truffles have been used on a number of special occasions over the years, including a dinner cooked at the 2020 BAFTA Awards. You can find out more about James at englishtruffles.co.uk, and you can follow him on Twitter at englishtruffles. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Ben.
Brilliant to have you on. As I'm sure is obvious, this is the first podcast episode, so very excited to get things underway and talk about mushrooms, my favorite subject. Yeah. James, could you start off just by sharing with me? I'd love to learn exactly how your journey began with truffles, with mushrooms, and how you got started.
Okay. Mushrooms came before truffles. I picked and eaten wild mushrooms for 25 plus years before I first went near a truffle, starting like everybody does with the simple ones, the field mushrooms and so on, and then going on a few fungus forays, gaining a bit more knowledge, to eventually thinking, yeah, this is really exciting, lots of books, and getting sort of seriously into it, and a lot of weekends in autumn out tromping through the woods looking for a variety of fungi, but not just to eat. Yes, that's the initial interest, but they're just so fascinating. They can do so much with humans, as we're sort of learning at the moment. I won't go off at a tangent into that, but there's a lot of benefits of them. Anyway, the big moment on the truffle front was getting made redundant from a big company. And while looking for a job, I wanted something else to do, something sort of to occupy my time. And I got a dog, and I knew from local newspaper reports that a pub not too far away from where I was living was jumping up and down about these huge numbers of truffles that somebody was finding, somewhere. Obviously, they don't tell you where. And it sort of got my interest. And so went online, found a lady that offered truffle dog training, went to her with my black lab, 6-year-old at the time, and spent 2 hours in her company with a bottle of truffle oil. And at the end, she said, well, your dog took to that like a duck to water. So and she said, we're hosting the UK's first truffle hunting championships in 3 months' time. Do you want to participate? And the little voice that I swear was the dog said yes. Do you fancy going over to the Olympics now, a couple of days' notice to get in the ski jumping? Anyway, we went home with a bottle of truffle oil, and we did a lot of training, in between, filling out CVs and application forms. And the pinnacle of the training was other half hiding bits of potato around a root, and then we'd have to go around and find them all. And we did okay. Anyway, we turned up this championships, and immediately I saw there were 3 television crews. I thought, oh my God, what have you done? But to cut the story short, we won it. Within 3 months of first being near truffle oil, and including one of the rounds, there was a real truffle hidden on a course, and blinking heck, insert own expletive, she could do it. She could find a real truffle. Oh my goodness, what a moment to do it. We went off, we were looking, and we were failing, because to quote somebody, to be a successful truffle hunting team, the dog is the nose and you're the brains. and the nose bit of the operation was working perfectly, but the brains bit, me, was letting the side down. It's about, you know, understanding their biology, understanding the relationship with trees, what trees, about soils, the various sort of signs that you need to understand, sort of, you know, to sort of go to the right places and to find them. But we worked on that. I moved down to a job in Dorset, where I'm still living. And the lady that ran the championship, she moved down not a million miles away. And she phoned me up one day. Sorry, it's a long story. Said, I've got a new site not too far from you. Do you want to come? Silly question. You know, tell me where. You know, she gave me...
Sorry, this is the same lady that who you got dog training from.
Exactly, anyway, she gave me directions, which I followed to the letter. And I was expecting, you know, a woodland out in the sticks, you know, rolling downland, etc. But I found myself parked out aside a school somewhere, and that's as much as I'm telling you. Yeah. And one of the television crews was CBBC, Children's BBC, and they'd made a documentary on a 12-year-old girl following her through her training and sort of at the championships. So more children in the land than adults knew we have truffles in this country, and they knew what a truffle looked like. So you've guessed what happened at the school. They had a nature day. You know, they were wandering around the school grounds looking for different things. And, oh, what are these black lumps poking up through the ground underneath these trees? Miss, they're truffles. This is my, you know, interpretation of what happened. But the long and short is the school grounds have many truffles in. And with this lady, I went there. And I think on that day we got a kilo of truffles out of the woods there. Wow. And the school got another fat check, and they have a remarkable library with a unique funding source.
That is incredible.
So yeah, so we now knew a bit more about where to go and where to look. And you know, that pivotal moment when we found our own first wild one, you grin like a Cheshire cat for a week, you know, euphoria, you have achieved what you tried to do. You bond more with the dog. The dog is your best friend anyway, but when you're you know, your buddy, your work colleague, the relationship is greater. Breathes. So from there, I knew my job in Dorset was a fixed-term contract and I wouldn't find anything in my technical field in Dorset afterwards. So I turned hobbies into part-time businesses, evenings, weekends, and it grew from there. The job finished and going to work was getting in the way of doing my own thing. So I had something else and had the truffles. And, you know, we're 10 years later now, or, you know, a good number of years of that, working on it full time plus the evenings. And yeah, that's where we are. So a long story, but a fun one.
Yeah, no, I just want to unpick a couple of things in there. So sure. I want to come back into the later part of the story, but just to go back to the beginning of, you said you were looking for mushrooms and interested in them, I think you said 20, 25 years before maybe the truffle side of things come in.
Yeah.
What was it that led you to be inspired to even start looking for mushrooms in the first place and go out there? What, did you have role models?
Childhood, I did sort of simple foraging with my mother when I was, you know, knee high, you know, making elderflower drinks, you know, picking various berries, nuts. I don't think we went near any fungi, but we did do a few seaweeds. Richard Mabey's work, Food for Free, sort of came out in the 70s. And, you know, that's still today one of the great foraging books. And, you know, that was inspiring. You know, I actually still have that copy in its lovely dust jacket, and it has got truffles in it, but you know, I didn't know that, notice that at the time. So that was sort of the first foraging. And I foraged various things, including the wild mushrooms. The wild mushrooms sort of was the more exciting bit. Yes, nettles, wild garlic, etc. I still eat today and still enjoy. And I think you know, we just found more and wanted to know more. So hence sort of starting to go on people's forays to, you know, to build up that confidence, you know, to sort of, if you are shown something and what makes it that, then you've got that confidence to go out and pick it on your own and take it home for the pot, or not, as the species permits.
Awesome. Similar to me, it sounds like. What I was going to ask you, I've been fascinated by this UK Truffle Championship, and I did that, you know, I looked into it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think sadly the lady who organised it is no longer with us.
Marion Dean. Yeah. That's right, yeah, who I'm forever indebted to. She was one of the people involved in the revival of truffles in this country. According to the books, the last professional truffle hunter was a guy called Alfred Collins, who lived near Salisbury and hung up his boots in the 1930s. And the secrets went to the grave with him, and we forgot about it. But a couple of people, probably in the 1990s, late 1990s, started selling truffle trees in this country, inoculated trees, the fungus is on the roots, so with a chance of growing truffles. And they need truffles as the starting point in that. So, we've got truffles in this country. And so Marion worked alongside one of the companies, sort of doing the dog training side, partly for landowners that had planted the trees, that then wanted a dog to go and look for those. But yeah, so I owe her a great deal. And yeah, sadly she has passed.
Yes. Yeah, it is sad. And I hope one day there might be a revival of the Truffle Dog Championship in the UK here as well.
Yeah, it's a different world now because we have professionals. It was all amateur, people just doing it for fun at that time. So I guess you might these days have to sort of have separate categories for the professionals and the amateurs. But they were 40 dogs run by 30 handlers, principally students of Marion Dean and her dog training school, and a few others as well. I still know a few of them, those that sort of have gone on to sort of build truffle businesses and so on from it.
What did the competition actually entail? You said there was some multiple rounds. What sort of things were you having to do?
The first round, you had a paddocky area with a fallen tree, some wood chips, some young saplings, and under the close scrutiny of a judge, one at a time, you led your dog through the course, and if they smelt truffle, you had to raise your hands. The dog had to sort of communicate to you in some manner, "Dad, it smells truffly here," and you put your hand up and the judge would write something down. So we walked through it, and by the fallen log, hand went up, in amongst the wood chips, in amongst the trees at particular places, and they'd left little drops of truffle oil at those locations. But then the pinnacle was going into this grassy bit, and she said, "It smells truffly here," and I bent down and the turf had been cut, and underneath the turf in a hole was a real truffle. So, oh my God, she can do it. That was sort of a moment.
And was that one that had been planted, or
that had been put there for the benefit of everybody? Yeah. It was nicely washed, looking very presentable. Yeah. And after lunch and truffle talks and so on, there was another round, an area probably 30 or 40 meters square. And there were lots of bits of wood with truffle oil put under sort of hinged bits of turf. And you had 3 minutes to find as many as you can. So judge says, "Go," you send your dog. As soon as it indicates, you put your hand up, he stops the clock. You go over, you lift the turf, you remove the piece of wood with truffle oil on it, put a little white flag in so they can find the hole again for resetting the course for afterwards. And then back to the start line, and you've got the rest of your 3 minutes. So we saw dogs getting 0, 1, and 2, dogs going 180 degrees the wrong direction off to the food tent. And we got 8, and we hadn't seen everybody go, so we didn't know how we'd got on. We thought we'd done okay. So at the end, there was an Oscars-style awards ceremony, and various prizes for different things. And then, maximum suspense, the results in reverse order, and the winners of the first UK Truffle Hunting Championships are Dramatic Pause, James and Bramble. So we got a trophy, which was a Perigord truffle, the most valuable black truffle, in a Perspex cube on a wooden plinth. We got a basket, we got a truffle digging tool, we got sort of whole series of rosettes for the different rounds and overall. And being a black Labrador, brackets, stomach on legs, most important to her, a sack of dog food.
Yeah.
And keep the rest. Amazing. As long as I've got food, I'm happy, she said. Yeah.
And did that have sort of any impact on your decision, I guess, to pursue this career into truffles? And, you know, was it a bit of a sign from the heavens that, oh, I just won this?
The career came later. I did see online a little while ago, and it's very difficult to find, a bit of a BBC interview, which I think's now gone off, where, you know, I was being interviewed at the end for the regional news. And I did clearly say, they said, you know, do you think they're wonderful things to eat? So I think the financial interest or the financial aspect interests me more. So I'd already got in my head the signs, the pound signs. but yeah, it was a hobby. It was an interest for quite a while. And, you know, until I got down to sort of this job in Dorset. And, then I knew I needed a plan because the job was, you know, fixed term contract for a number of years, and I didn't want to move away from Dorset afterwards. So what can I do to, you know, set things up for when the contract finishes? Oh, I could turn, yeah, okay, I could start finding some more truffles. I already found a few, but, you know, I could, you know, initially they all went to one person who was doing the tree inoculation, but then it sort of soon spread from that.
Awesome. And I am very curious of how did it turn into, from a hobby to the business? You know, what were the sequence of events that happened where, you know, what did you make your first sales doing, and how did it progress from there?
The first sales, as I say, were to the one of the people in this country that does the tree inoculation. He sells truffle trees and does research on that. So he was the first buyer of everything that I found, you know, the odd check for, you know, I don't know, £90 or 100, you know, a couple of hundred quid, you know, fairly small.
He was buying these in order to create more truffle inoculated trees for his business. Okay.
That's exactly it. Yes. And, I think I'd started doing wild food foraging courses as well, you know, the whole raft from, you know, shellfish and seaweeds to mushrooms, you know, teaching people and cooking all these things. And I think I did start to advertise truffles for sale on the website that I'd got for that. That was the second business. And people started to buy them. And I thought, this is, you know, possibility. And it just sort of, you know, eventually it had its own website, and we were just selling the truffles, and then, you know, other bits came to it, you know, to sort of to beef up what we were doing. For example, we sort of came up with the idea of a truffle hunting experience day where either people with interest in dogs, people interested in food, or those with both would come out and have a whole day with us, learn all about truffles, participate in truffle hunting, have a nice lunch, do some more truffle hunting, and then eat a truffle dish at the end of the day. And I think it was 2012 we did our first one of those down here in Dorset. And the first one was for a group of two, and, you know, all things start small. Now we see, you know, we do about a dozen of them per year with, you know, 15 plus people on. So, you know, it has mushroomed, pun intended.
Yeah, that's amazing. When I first read that it was possible from your website to have a truffle foraging experience day, because I've been on a few foraging courses, I mainly was interested in the plant side of things, because I already had a big obsession about the mushroom side of things, and, you know, dived very deep into that. But I didn't realize, you know, in the down season there's still a load of plant and stuff, so I got interested in that. And then throughout my searching for that, I came across, it must have been your website, with Truffle Experience Foraging Days, which, as I mentioned, has been on my Christmas list for a while now, so fingers crossed one day. But I also, in thinking of what I wanted to speak to you about on this call, like, there must be a I wondered what your thoughts were on, because obviously with truffle hunting, it comes with it this big secrecy. I mean, I know you've watched the Truffle Hunters movie, and that was a ridiculous insight into the secrecy that, you know, these old Italian truffle hunters, you know, they wouldn't even tell their family when they're pretty much, you know, on their deathbed, where their secret spots are. They'd rather go to the grave and take all that knowledge with them. So it was almost like a surreal thing to hear somebody actually providing a truffle foraging, because obviously you're going to be end up giving away certain locations by default to handfuls and handfuls of people. And I just wondered what your thoughts are on that, and how does that sit with you, and how do you feel about it?
Yeah, the truffle hunting days are done on private locations where there is no public access to them. And so far, touch wood, the many, many hundreds, you know, potentially thousands of people now that have been with us are all nice, honest people. Yes, some have got dogs and want to, you know, they're getting the human education side. I said, you know, the dog's the nose, you're the brains. They were doing the brain education side. And, you know, I have known a few of them gone on and have found truffles successfully afterwards. So, yeah, those sites, you know, they're not the best sites. The sort of the you know, nowhere's quite always a truffle mine, but you know, there are places we can get larger quantities. So these are, you know, reasonable sites, you know, where our chance of success, you know, we've had very, very few failures over the 10 years or so. But you know, we'll find enough to entertain people with them. So yeah, on those sites, I don't mind. But yes, you're completely right. There's secrecy. The places where I go for production, where they are sold, you know, primarily they are private sites and I have an arrangement with the landowner. I pay them X per kilo for everything that I find. But a few of them are more public than that, fulfilling the legal requirements of the land, of course. And you know, yes, you don't want to meet other truffle hunters on them. And I have on occasions in the little lay-by, a car comes in as I'm going and the person says, I know who you are and I know exactly what you're doing. And I'm getting out of the car with my dog to go into the wood. But I say, I've just been in there, so there's no point. But the fact that somebody has driven a, you know, a long way to go to my, I don't own it in any legal sense, but that is where I go for my truffles. And yeah, you can hear a slightly knocked bit to my voice. You know, get off my land. That's my patch. Go away. You know, yes, I know even in Dorset, probably three or four people that either currently or have made some of their living from truffle. So, you know, how many truffle hunters are there in the country? I haven't got a clue, but, you know, I know some of the local ones. You know, on the odd occasion, you know, one will leave a note on under your windscreen wiper in jest, you know, go away, this is my spot, or something like that. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's not quite, you know, Italian ice cream wars, you know, slashing people's tires. And what happens, as you say, in the Truffle Hunter film, fantastic film, you know, if you're interested in this podcast, you should get to see that film. You know, on the continent, sadly, people do put poisoned strychnine-laden meat into the woods to kill off competitors' dogs. Some of the truffle hunters sort of put not a muzzle, but you know, a thing over on the nose, the dog, that prevents it from taking food because they have lost dogs to this. You know, touch wood, pray we never get to the stage of having such sort of competition in this country. But you know, the potential is there for that. So yeah, it's a I make more from taking people out than I do from selling truffles. So, you know, I'm very happy to carry on doing that on public sites, on private sites. But there's a little bit of haze on the encouraging people versus, you know, keeping it all secret. You know, I have friends and colleagues that purely hunt truffles and that's all they do. And, you know, they're out of the public domain. You know, my face is in the public domain, such as, you know, on this, you know, some of the other outlets, media places where I've been. And, you know, one day somebody else, you know, will recognise you. You know, well, excuse me, I recognise you, for, you know, from somewhere. Go away. But, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. It's a tricky one, I think. But, you know, you've sort of explained it quite well. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you for that. And whilst I've got you, I thought I'd be cheeky and just ask you a dog training question. or basically share with you where I'm up to with Buddy.
Okay, sure.
and just an example of what we did this morning, and maybe what would you suggest what either we're doing right or doing wrong. But the first 12 months of his training, I've mainly focused on just him being a great dog, good with all the basic commands, great with recall, and that has gone tremendously well. And then more recently, and we've been playing a lot of like find it games, you know, sniff this out, whatever it is. And so when it came to then start, you know, hiding truffle scented cotton buds in tinfoil is what I did. I saw somebody do that online and thought that's cheap, easy, and I've got everything in the kitchen and I can do that now. So we've been hiding those around, and I've since switched that out, and I've cut open a little hole in a squash ball and put the cotton buds in there with a couple of drops of the truffle oil. And I jumped a few steps ahead and went straight into the woods, probably quicker than I should have, but he seemed to be able to cope with it. But yesterday, I actually hid these squash balls and buried them maybe 3 or 4 centimeters deep, and then wanted to come back overnight because I found he's been almost perfect with... If I'm getting him to sit in the woods, and then I'm going to dig hide them in the trees, he's sort of looking at me, sort of not looking at me. I've had him distracted, but if I give him the command instantly, you know, a few seconds after I've hidden them, he's almost perfect at finding them. So it makes me think, well, maybe he's just scenting my hand or the turf. So I, you know, try and do some fake digs. But yesterday, for the second time, I did it overnight. So, you know, hoping that the scent permeates up through the ground a little bit more naturally. But he struggled a lot more with it and went over the scent several times. And I'm just wondering, maybe I'm using the wrong delivery vehicle for the scent and the ball, or maybe it's just a case of I need to reverse and go back to a more basic step. So I wondered what your thoughts were on that. He did eventually find it, but it was, you know, I ended up with Danny's help, we sort of like boxed him in and helped him and said, look, search this area. And he managed to find it.
Okay. What you've done sounds great, first of all. So, you know, congratulate yourself and Buddy on that. When you start in a field, a simple environment, a grassy area that's got a lot less distractions, it's a simpler environment for a dog to learn. So you've done the right thing. You don't go to a wood on day one. You don't go to a wood on day two. Woods are a long way down the way. You know, you only go to a wood when you could bet me 10 quid happily that if you and Buddy were looking the other way and I went and hid the truffle scented object, you know, in a tuft of grass, you know, in the bottom of a hedge, that he would find it. And only when you do that, you know, we'll do it 10 times. That's 100 quid. So that's getting a bit more serious. Then you go to the woods. I would say vary the object. The object that you're putting your truffle oil in, and truffle oil is a great starting place for training the dog. It's cheaper. It's you've got a long shelf life, whereas a truffle costs you money. It goes off fairly quickly, although you can pop in the freezer. The object will have its own smell. So the squash ball, for example, there is a smell of rubber to that. You know, my dogs could find a tennis ball that's been in the hedge for 10 years, you know, sort of just rotting the bottom. It's still got its own scent profile. So you need to vary the object. And when you're getting serious, you want to wash it up, hot water, let it drain, and then never touch it again with your bare hand. So you're not putting your scent. You know, is the dog finding the smell of truffle? Possibly. Or is it finding the smell of rubber? Is it finding your smell, etc.? You want to eliminate as many of the other variables as you can. Going to the woods, potentially get somebody else to do it, so your partner. Overnight is good. Otherwise, the dog is just following your scent. You know, like, you know, you see the Alsatian getting out the back of the van and tracking off after the criminal. They are following the scent of where the criminal has run away, and so that could be what your dog is doing. It's following your scent, so leaving it overnight or longer is also a sensible thing to do. Weather conditions do make a lot of different people sort of say when we turn up on a truffle hunting day, you know, does it matter if it's raining? Does it matter if it's, you know, they say, oh, what a lovely day. And it's one of those bright, frosty, you know, blue skies, winter days, and it's still as anything. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, there's no wind today. Wind is good. So, you know, I don't know what the wind was like on the day you described, but, you know, having, you know, not a howling gale, that's, you know, a bit more complicated for dogs, and you're doing a tree falling on your head. But, you know, a bit of, you know, a good level of wind is good. And you work the dog always knowing what the wind is doing. You know, we don't work the same directions through the same wood every time we visit it. How we work depends on what the wind is doing. So using the wind to our advantage, with the wind bringing smells to us. So you work at right angles to the wind. So that's sort of always important. So I'm forever, you know, throwing a handful of leaves in the air. You know, if I'm in a field with a younger dog, you know, grabbing a tuft of grass and throwing it in the air to sort of see what the wind is doing. And you sort of, it will change about. So you reorientate yourself so you are working across the wind. But what you're doing is sounds right, you know, swap your containers, etc. about, put it there the night before. Some wind is good. And as you sort of did, you know, start on a fairly small area. So, you know, the dog's not searching the whole wood for one object. But, you know, we'll just do this little part of a wood, and you know, it's, you know, within the area boxed by, you know, those six trees or something like that. Some dogs will run around like a nutcase, particularly Spaniels. No offense to Spaniels. I know Buddy's not a Spaniel in the picture. But they want to work too fast and slowly wins the race. And that may mean that you work the dog on a lead. So you are leading the dog around, and if they suddenly, you know, veer off to one side, that's, you know, you give them the benefit of the doubt and you let them go, and then you find, you know, they've gone up to a tree where another dog's had a pee or something like that, or there's some, you know, badger dung or something exciting. But, you know, slowly wins the race. I hope that helps, Ben.
The point you last touched on is very bad, because Buddy does... I mean, he's a half Vizsla, half Labrador. So the Vizsla in him, I think, is wanting to shoot off and sprint everywhere. Probably the Labrador as well. But that's a great idea. And yeah, I think I'll have to put him on lead. And also, I've been jumping up too quickly into woods just because it's convenient, because that's where we go walking every morning. So yeah. I will probably step back to a field. Which makes a lot of sense.
You can still do the hiding the day before, getting somebody else to put it out. So the hidden ones, there's the two types, blinds they call them in the gun dog world. There's the ones where you know where it is, so you went and put it, but your body language will actually help tell the dog where it is. You will, oh yeah, yeah, you will react in some way subconsciously when the dog is getting near, and the dog can pick up on that. So the second type further down the road is you don't know where it is. Your partner has put it out. So you are equally blind as well as the dog. And then you're not giving anything away. To quote another animal example, you know, there's been examples of horses that can count. And it's purely the body language of the person reacting that, you know, count to three. And, you know, the sort of person reacts in some way until the horse neighs three times or something. Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. And how many dogs have you got at the moment?
We always have two on the go. Just, you know, dogs and truffle dogs, you know, they are not working a good proportion of the time. They need to fit in with your life. You know, yeah. The amount of exercise you can give them, you know, if you've got other commitments, family, kids, etc. You know, the right breed of dog that gets on with young kids. Or, you know, we can't have more in the back of the car, you know, so two is always what we do. So, you know, sort of as they get older, you sort of get a new one on the go. And, you know, so, you know, when, you know, you sadly lose your dog, then, you know, you've got your next one is already on the case. So, you know, I've got continuity. Yes, you know, you do have periods where if you've only got one, you've got all your eggs in one basket. You know, that's my living for the next couple of years in that dog. We always try to have two, you know, so what, as soon as we start to lose one, then another one gets replaced. So we are on about numbers 4 and 5 or something like that currently.
And is there anything that, now that you've gone through a few truffle dogs and through training them, is there anything that you're doing differently now with your more recent dogs than you did with the old dogs that you think makes a bigger impact to their ability to hunt truffles?
Every dog is an individual. They learn things differently. They learn at different speeds. But I've been teaching truffle dog training, running workshops around the country for 7-8 years or something like that. We've seen a lot of dogs. So at the beginning, prior to launching the first one, I did a lot of time studying sort of scent training and methods and approaches. So, I have my, what I apply at a workshop, I apply that to my dogs. But, each is different. Each will sort of get bits sooner or quicker, or is, more distracted in woods. So, like you said, the basic dog training is where you're starting. Do your socialization, go to all manner of environments. You've got a bit of roadside verge you're in, and a fire engine goes past with its siren blaring. If you're working your dog even on lead, you don't want to pull out your hands or something like that. So as a puppy, experiencing that, experiencing hearing a train go past, or every sort of environment is key. So, I'm just illustrating, get your normal dog training done. But as you said, recall is so important. The woods are full of exciting things, the pheasants, the deer, etc. I have sadly heard of truffle dogs running after deer and going across roads. I won't finish the story, but recall is so important on a dog. Get your basics done first.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree more. I think if I was to sum up all that I did in the beginning, was all I wanted to do was focus on making him a confident dog, in everything that I did. Because if he was 100% confident, then nothing's going to faze him. No other dogs are going to faze him. He's going to just be happy as Larry and go lucky. Apart from a few weeks where he was a little bit of a boisterous teenager, we have to check that.
You only had a few weeks. My youngest one is at the thug stage. So we need to get through this. But yeah, he's a good lad. But so it's confidence in the dog, and it's fun. So playing games, hide and seek, as you said, with bits of food and things like that. Yeah, everything wants to be fun for you and the dog. It's a special time when the dog is young. They grow up so quickly. Enjoy your dog. It's your work colleague. So your relationship with it is even more so than your pet. It's that's my buddy. You spend so much time, you and them, in the woods. You get on really, really well.
Excellent. What's been one of the biggest challenges, or some of the biggest challenges you've had with growing your two businesses? I guess the Hedgerow Harvest, which I think you shared with me, is no longer in the runnings, and then also English Truffles. What's been some of the biggest challenges you faced as a business owner trying to?
I had the two initially. They were the two hobbies that I turned to living to the foraging courses and the truffle business. Both went well, both grew, enjoy them both. Foraging courses, there's a lot more people out there doing that sort of competition. The growth of income was greater on the truffle side. So after 10 years, if you're going to have two websites, two sets of newsletters, .. I got to the point where I decided, there's only so many hours in the day. Too many hours were being spent doing work-related things. I decided, I love teaching people mushrooms, but it was, and the rest of the foraging stuff. And, I think I was pretty good at it. But something had to give. I wanted more me time and family time, not tucked away at the computer until, you know, late at night. I like the flexibility of working for yourself, but so that one sadly went after a decade or so of doing those. I think, yeah, on the truffle side again, yeah, the growth has been great, but it's been a challenge. You try new things out, some work, some don't, and it's when it's young, you sort of do go out in all sorts of different directions and try different things. For example, one time we were buying, you know, meter long sections of plastic pipe and making sort of truffle scenting tubes, end caps on it and a few holes in it. So, you know, I was in the garage sawing up lengths of plastic pipe and, we sold them, but, you know, it took time and, you know, it's, where could, you know, focus on the sort of the more rewarding, both, you know, personally rewarding and financially rewarding activities. So, yeah, some things, you know, we have tried, they're a success, but we drop them off. Yeah, some things we tried, they didn't work, and, you know, you put them to bed and sort of moved on. So it's sort of focus. We are a virtual one-man band. So I do everything from, you know, washing the truffles to packing them to, you know, other half takes them to the post office and does some of my accounts, which I'm very grateful. But, you know, you get an email says, you know, dear English Truffle team, can you forward this to your marketing manager? You're talking to him, whatever, you know, your salesperson, your overseas currency person, you're talking to him, you know, that's just the nature of one-man bands. You know, I do all the website sort of stuff as well because I'm a techie by background. There is always lots to do, and it's, you know, that's just the, like anything in the world, you know, prioritizing. You alluded to the sort of the seasonal nature of things. When I had the foraging courses, we started in March and we carried on through to the end of October, sort of the main mushroom season. Truffles, ignoring the dog training, was sort of from, you know, August-ish, sort of through till sort of late January. You then got a little bit of a breather between the two when you could, you know, do big project stuff like, you know, revamp a website or change your credit card provider, which takes a hell of a lot of unpicking. Since I put that onto bed, I'm now getting to the quiet season. So I'm hoping for a quieter year. I've still got quite a lot of big background projects and things I need to do for the truffle business. But, you know, I'm hoping to put my feet up for a little while.
Nice. With the big projects you mentioned there, is there anything new that English Truffles is looking to grow or expand into, or is it just more of the same, or
largely improvements to stuff that we already do. Truffles is environment, you know, foraging is environment. You know, I'm really, you know, I care enormously about the environment and, you know, trying to reduce the environmental impact of what we do as a business. So one project that I have delved into about four times and still without success is to try and eliminate all plastic from everything we do, or as much as we can. And I've seen some great packaging for truffles because the majority we send out mail order. The majority we send out in small quantities. So you're sending out something the size of a golf ball. Any nice thermally insulated packaging is not available in that sort of size. And I don't want to buy 10,000 units of it and fill my garage with it. So, you know, it's not a very exciting project, but it's something I, you know, my heart wants to do, is just, you know, to sort out some sensible packaging that's, you know, affordable. And it's, you know, completely, you know, if I send a truffle to you, it could all go in your curbside recycling and nothing into your, you know, or very little into your sort of landfill bin as well. So it's a dull project, but it takes a lot of research to sort of try and answer it.
And I've just realized I've skipped one of these prompts I put into a bowl, different color, so I wouldn't forget it at the beginning, but I did forget it at the beginning. Big truffle story. What does that inspire in you, and what can you share with us about your big truffle story?
you always want to find the biggest, best one. And there, you know, that happens in the years with more rain. So when the holidaymakers are moaning that, you know, the sun's not out and, you know, so on, I'm slightly happy because, you know, more rain makes bigger truffles. The previous personal best was something like 438 grams, which, that sort of size, hopefully that's sort of on the camera, probably maybe even a little bit bigger. And that was found on the perfect day, which is about 4 days before Christmas. Christmas, we get a lot of truffle orders and it's all done with military precision planning. And we take orders and we close the order book when we've got to a certain amount, so it's achievable. You know, you don't want to promise, you know, you're going to find 10 million tons of truffles when you're only going to get, you know, X kilos. So, you know, we go very carefully. Anyway, we truffle hunt from before first light till after first light for 2 days solid. And then we're packing overnight and things are landing on doormats on about the 23rd of December, having been harvested a day or so before. To get them there as fast as possible, you know, as fresh as possible for Christmas. And the day, one of those days, the truffle gods had done the right thing. And on this one site, they were prolific and some were huge. And out came this 438 gram one that, you know, took about 3/4 an hour to excavate because there was a root the size of your thumb across the top of it. We got it out. And we came home and, you know, you wash them and you line them up in different weights. So, you know, you've got, you know, X number of 30 gram orders, X number of 50 gram orders, and you sort of, you know, you want to sort of try and allocate the right size truffle to the order. So you're not, you know, if they've ordered 50 grams, you're not going to give them 150 grams. You know, you would cut that one into three as closely as you could. So you get the three 50 gram orders. You know, we do tell people there'll be pieces of larger ones or several small ones. I got this blinking great truffle and I ummed and ahed. Do I cut it? Do I keep it intact? You know, no restaurant's going to be open on Christmas Day, so, you know, it's not going to go to the trade. And, you know, I undenied for about 3 hours and I took a knife to it and I cut it into some smaller pieces. And within 5 minutes later, the phone went and it was a friend of mine who gets a little truffle for Christmas. And he says, I've just spoken to somebody, a celebrity chef, campaigner type person, and he wants it for his wife for Christmas. Bother is a politer form of the word that came to my mind. I just cut it into smaller pieces. He still got a 200 plus gram one, so his wife got something for Christmas, but not quite as impressive as the bigger one. So close, but yeah, that 5 minutes was all important. But we then managed to beat that But a couple of years ago, 606 grams, I believe.
Wow.
It did appear on one of the BBC regional newses, where a lady said it was Britain's largest truffle. Not quite. Pretty good, though. One of our services is rent a truffle hound, where you can hire us to look in your woods or to look in your truffle orchard where you're growing truffles very deliberately. And so it's been paid by the hour. So all truffles belong to the landowner. And we found this thing and it was, you know, huge. 636 grams is that on screen? Yes. It must be that. Yeah. So it was, that's a monster truffle. But yeah, I've heard of one or two people that have done bigger ones. But yeah.
That was in a truffle orchard, so purposely cultivated truffle. Wow.
Yeah. Blimey. But not mine, as I say, sadly. But the owner of it has dined out on that story many times.
And where else have you foraged for truffles only in the UK, or have you been?
Yeah, only in the UK. We have been invited overseas. We've had people from all over the world come on our truffle hunting days. One lady was a British expat who's got a chateau in France, and she came on our truffle day, said, you must come down. Oh, there's a barking dog. You must come down to my chateau where I've got a truffle orchard. Busman's holiday. I want to forget about truffles when I go on holiday, as much as I can. and we did get a Turkish hazel grower, the person who's got the biggest company in Turkey, probably. He invited to fly us out to Turkey to go through all his hazel orchards to see if he got any truffles in there. I did Google him, and there was a picture of his wine cave. So not a wine cellar, a wine cave. And I think it had got all the stars in the correct positions. They'd be in the night sky as little lights inside this cave. But I want to put my dogs in the hold of a plane, so it didn't happen. But yeah.
Awesome. What would be, based on everywhere where you've found truffles in the UK, I guess more on the public land side of things, where have you found the most success, and what does the woodland look like, or what trees are the, I mean, I'd have a decent idea, but in your experience, where do you tend to find the most?
They grow in association with a number of trees. For those that don't know, it's what we call a mycorrhiza relationship. Under the ground, the main part of the body of the fungus, what we call the mycelium, microscopic threads, is attached to the roots of the trees, and there's a symbiotic relationship. Nutrients and water goes to the trees, and carbon capture in the form of carbohydrates and sugars goes back to the fungus in return. Their favorite is beech trees, so the best place in my book to head for is beech trees, a beech plantation. And truffles want alkaline, free-draining soil, rich in lime, and we find that on chalk and limestone. So beech plantation on chalk is probably the best place to to head for. So I've forgotten the beginning part of that question. Excuse me. Go on. Can you remind me?
Just where's the best place to find them? I mean, following what you just said there, I know it needs to be limestone chalk. Well, currently I'm Ascot, so it's not amazing, but I'm quite close to Chiltern Hills or Chiltern Downs, and we went there on the weekend. I think, you know, it's a bit late in the season from the research and, you know, even reading your own articles, a bit too late, but, you know, it's good scouting for next year, because I did find some very good beech woodland. So I'm glad you said beech. Look forward to when I can next go there. And a question I had was, does it make a difference how mature these beech or other trees are? Because I've read that actually, if they're super mature, then actually there's a lower chance of finding an abundance of truffles. Or
we've been in plantations of beech trees where, you know, truffle growing was never part of the plan. The fact that the truffles are there is just good fortune. An animal has eaten the truffle. It's the reproductive strategy, is they smell to attract the animal, and then they've, you know, the animal's eaten it, wandered into this bit of woodland and dung. But, you know, we have found in amongst, you know, beech trees of that sort of diameter, you know, to ones that you'd struggle to hug. Yes, you know, you get more when they're younger, and then so they probably declines a bit sort of past that as sort of they are getting bigger. But you should still get some truffles there. It's not always the youngest plantations. Where all locations where we take people on our truffle hunting days, that's Dorset, Wiltshire and Hampshire, are beech plantations, and they're probably 40, 60, 80 sort of years old, those plantations. And we do go in some old ones as well as that, but you know, some of the places we go, you know, the trees are 20 years old, probably been some younger ones as well. Slightly on the younger side is better, but yeah, it's still worth a look even in older ones.
And if you were going to recce a new site for your own personal sort of expansion of secret spots, what would be the quick overview of your strategy for that day? Like, would you concentrate on a small area and look at it really like well with your dog, or would you sort of go for a larger area and comb it more quickly with your dog? What would be some of the things that you would do if you were looking for someone
new? I would do a hell of a lot of homework before I go. I don't give all my secrets away. No. But I would know on paper, does it tick the box, or on computer screen, does it tick all of the boxes I've got in my head for what it needs to have? You know, looking at geology would be, you know, one thing I will say. Then it would be, I have 2 days when I go out. I'm doing the harvesting days when I'm going to places where I found truffles in quantity on occasions before, and I'll pretty much guarantee I'll find truffles in every wood that I go to. We do have the days where we're doing recceing sites, and we're not after worried how many we take home. So that is, you're in and out quickly. So you just do a couple of random lines, transects through the wood, see what you find. You know, if you find nothing, you know, you might make a note, or, you know, it looked okay, but I didn't find anything. It may be you just get there and you just, you know, even don't get out of the car, you know, circumstances are different to what you predicted, and you can just sort of tell botanical clues whether it's any good or not.
Brilliant. I just have a couple of rapid fire questions, really, just sure. to sort of wrap things up a little bit okay. here, and then I'll give you a chance to share any final words or bits of wisdom or any sort of recommendations that you might have. So, what's your favourite type of truffle species?
The ones that we sell, brackets the pound signs attached to. We call the autumn truffle Tuber uncinatum. It was always thought of as a separate species, but it has been worked out through DNA and genetic studies that it's actually the same as a summer truffle. But there are differences due to sort of environmental conditions. Primarily, an autumn truffle is found in the autumn, a summer truffle is found in the summer. An autumn truffle is a better beast. The culinary world makes the distinction, the scientists don't. So we like an autumn truffle. That's what we sell. It is the best common or best more common species of truffle found in this country. It can be trumped by the black truffle, also known as the Perigord truffle, the black winter truffle, that's naturally at home in Mediterranean climates. But we know of a number of people, and again, you know, as you said, there is secrecy in the truffle world. We know of a number of people have grown that truffle, the Perigord, the winter truffle, in this country, but that is only grown, so they're not wild found. Mm-hmm. We have been to one or two orchards to look for them, as opposed to many orchards with the autumn / summer truffle. And we haven't found one yet, so I've not seen one. I don't go out buying truffles, so you know, I haven't been near a Perigord. So you know, the one that I find, you know, day in day out when I'm out looking, and I sell, you know, quantity of, and I take people out, and they jump up and down, and you know, I tick things off their bucket lists, and they, you know, they're very happy. Is my favourite.
Brilliant. And in two or three words, or however
Two or three words.
No. In two or three words, what does the autumn truffle taste like? How would you describe it?
You like people describing a wine. You're putting all sorts of, you know, descriptors on it, and people have different opinions. You know, earthy is a word that is used. Nutty is the word used. You know, I think, you know, the closest aroma to it, and you know. We do this on the truffle hunting day. You know, everybody have a smell. What word can you think of? And somebody might say raw beetroot, and everybody goes, "Raw beetroot." You're right. It does smell very similar to that. Again, it's the earthiness of it. So yeah, there are some naughty people that might say it smells of sex and socks or something like that. But I'll stick with beetroot.
Brilliant. And I saw on your Twitter feed, you had linked to an article of a chap who had found like a 1.7 kilogram white truffle or something similar to that. And I think the story behind it was he didn't sell it. He invited 200 of his local community to have like a slap up truffle based meal. which is an amazing story in and of itself. But it leads me on to the question, if you find the largest truffle of your life, do you sell it or do you eat it?
I'd sell it. No shadow of a doubt.
Okay, brilliant.
If you give people, 10, 15 grams, 20 grams of truffle and you find a 600 gram one, you need a lot of people to feed that to in a fairly short period. Fresh is best. Eat it as soon as you can. So, it would be a big do to get rid of it. So, sell that size to a restaurant or sell a small part of it to many restaurants. Yeah.
The single best way that you like enjoying eating your truffles?
Simple things are best where it is the ingredient. You're not getting strong flavors from other things. Pretty much if you slice open horizontally a British Brie or Camembert, shave or grate the truffle inside it, put the lid back on so it looks a bit like a sandwich, wrap it up in cling film, chuck it in the fridge for a couple of days, and then bring it out, take it out of the cling film, very important, wrap it in baking foil, silver foil, pop it in the oven until it's soft and gooey, and then eat with crusty bread that you're dunking into the cheesy goo that is going to all end up down your chin as you eat it. That's pretty good way of eating it.
Wow. And that sounds a hell of a lot better than the truffle breeze that you can buy in the delis, it the way that you've just described.
Yeah.
Wow. What book have you most gifted to people?
Ooh, I sell a book. So that's probably the answer. I haven't given any away. There's a wonderful chap called Gareth Renardon, who's a British expat who lives in New Zealand, tweets profusely about many things other than Wordle, which is his current favourite. He grows four types of truffle out there in New Zealand, and he's written a book in it called The Truffle Book.
Yeah, that's my first book.
This is no coincidence, this is no planning. It is at my arm's length because I'm using it at the moment for something I'm writing. It's fairly thin. It's good. It's a couple of years old now, and there's been scientific advances, things like that, in some things. But very, very good. Very accessible. It's coffee table. It's not overly scientific. So that is my go-to truffle book, which is only available via my website in the UK. Nobody else stocks it. Gareth sends them by the box from New Zealand, where we end up paying more on postage than we do for the actual books.
Brilliant. I mean, I must have purchased it through your website then, because that was the first, I think it was the first truffle specific book that I got. And he's agreed to be a guest on the show, actually. And
oh, brilliant.
Had a back and forth with him this morning and he sends his regards to you. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, no, we took him out truffle hunting when he came out and rather annoyingly he found the biggest truffle of the day using my dog. But the one he dug up was the biggest. So yeah, great. I shall look forward to seeing the podcast with him. Very much.
Awesome. And finally, what's one interesting or uncommon thing about you that most people don't know about?
Oh God, I hate this. When I used to work, used to be employed, you'd sometimes have to do that as part of your ice breaking things. I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Any other hobbies other than mushrooms and foraging?
Walking, dog walking, hiking as you call it, day walks in wonderful countryside, seeing beautiful landscapes, appreciating flora and fauna, be it along the coast or inland in hills, mountains. That's my habitat, is outdoors, not stuck to a computer like I spend the greater part of my life.
Awesome. And how can people find out more about you if they want to get more involved?
It's the website, EnglishTruffles.co.uk is where to find us. Yes, we're on Twitter and Instagram to a very slight level. The website's the best place to come.
Awesome. And do you have any final parting thoughts or recommendations for anybody listening to this show as it relates to truffles or mushroom foraging? or truffle dog training?
If you're an eater, give English ones a go. Truffle quality is all about freshness. And we go 24 or 48 hours from ground to table. Whereas if you buy a truffle at Borough Market, for example, we have had customers tell us they've been disloyal. They went to Borough Market and they won't go back. Sorry, Borough Market. But it's gone little man to bigger man out in another country. It's been then transported, etc. And, you know, by the time it's, you know, a week plus old, it's lost, you know, the greater part of its aroma, and aroma and flavour intrinsically linked. So, yeah, give the British ones a try. You know, when I do a talk, you know, I say, you know, I was promised to get a T-shirt printed. First thing, number one is, yes, we have truffles in this country. Number two is, I don't use a pig. And, you know, people don't know we have truffles in this country, yeah, and are very surprised to learn about them. So, yeah, give them a try, I would say. Whether you buy them or you try to find them yourself, give them a try.
Brilliant. There's a million and one more questions I could ask, but obviously conscious of your time. But perhaps once we're a bit further down the line, we can invite you back on and dive a bit deeper.
Yeah, good pleasure.
But yeah, no, thank you so much, James, for your time and for being the first willing participant on Truffle Tales. And I think there'll be a lot more to come. And I wish you a lot of success in everything that you're doing with English truffles. And if there's anything I can do to help, then just let me know.
Great. Well, good to talk to you. Thanks so much, and good luck. With the rest. Yeah, I've enjoyed this first one, and I look forward to seeing the other people, including Gareth, and see who else you find from the world of truffles and mushrooms.
Got Melissa. Melissa Waddingham's also agreed. I had some contact with her. I know her.
I have to point out, we beat her in the UK Truffle Hunting Championships. There's been a competitive rivalry. That was 2008. So even 14 years later, there's still competitive rivalry. Yeah, I know Melissa.
I had a chat with her nearly a year ago now. And I think even back then, I toyed with the idea of reintroducing the UK Truffle Championships and stuff. So I hope that can be something that, collaboratively or whatever, individually, we can all do. But as you said, I didn't think about it. We're probably going to need to, you know, create categories between professionals now and amateurs, which is food for thought. But maybe one day.
Well, yeah, if you want to know more on that one, definitely talk to me and I can go into it in even more detail. Great.
Excellent. All right. Take care, James. And thank you again.
Thanks. And good luck with your training and buddy.
I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah. I expected that picture of your first truffle.
That's it for this episode. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing or leaving the podcast a review. Please also share this podcast with a friend or loved one who you think will enjoy it too. Also, in 2022, I co-hosted the first ever UK Truffle Festival and Truffle Dog Championships, where we celebrated the British truffle. At this mini festival, there was truffles, mushrooms, wild talks, interesting and quirky local businesses, gorgeous truffle-inspired food, English sparkling wine, and of course, lots of dogs. And we'll be running it again each and every year. This event sold out in its first year, and it's likely that will happen again next year too. To ensure you don't miss out for 2023, be sure to join our email waitlist. To join the UK Truffle Festival waiting list and to be notified when tickets go on sale, go to trufflefestival.co.uk and sign up. Talk soon. And keep truffling.